I'm only happy when it rains. I'm only happy when it's complicated.
Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. The 2014 Yellow Phone Music Conference kicks off tomorrow evening in Milwaukee. The annual gathering offers a showcase for unsigned, mainly Midwestern bands in front of music industry executives. One of those appearing for the first time at any music conference is Viroqua native Butch Vig. Vig is best known as being a musician and a producer. He's the drummer for the multi-platinum Grammy-nominated band Garbage, which came out of Madison in the early 1990s. He's also won awards for producing albums from bands from Nirvana to Green Day to the Foo Fighters. Vig will give the keynote at Yellow Phone on Friday morning. First, though, he joined Lake Effect's Bonnie North from his office in Los Angeles and explained why this conference was a good fit for him.
I like it that it's obviously being centered in Milwaukee, it's focused on the Midwest. And what I really like about it is I am excited that it's sort of going back to square one, almost a grassroots start of where the festival, some of the big successful music conferences now started 20 or 25 years ago. And it's really trying to cater to young, unsigned bands and help them navigate the music business and to get information and make connections with the music industry and try to just help them get a leg forward.
Is that why you decided to participate? Because, as you said, this is the first one you've done.
I think the reason I got excited was Jeff Kaslitz asked, and Scott, asked me, and initially I said, I don't know if I really want to do that. When they asked me if I want to do a keynote speech, I kind of cringed because I don't like giving speeches. And then Jeff said, well, it doesn't have to be a formal speech. It can be sort of a Q&A. We can just riff off each other and talk about the state of music and where it is and where we see it going, and just get involved with participation with the audience. So, I don't think it's going to be scripted. We're just going to kind of go off the cuff. But it's a chance for me to be able to share some of my experience to a new generation of musicians and songwriters. And I'm really lucky that I had over 30 years that I've had this long career. And I just feel like it's a good thing to do, to be able to go back to where I grew up and share that experience with people.
It's changed so much, though, in those 30 years. I mean, my God, it's a seismic shift or a number of seismic shifts in the way the music industry works and how bands get noticed and how they actually get signed, or if they get signed, if they do it on their own. From when you first started, What changes have you seen that you think have profoundly affected the way new music gets to audiences?
When I first started out, the music industry was a mystery. Recording was a mystery. Going into a studio was a mystery. What is publishing? I didn't know anything about it. And it seemed like there were all these obstacles you had to overcome in order to try and navigate a career for yourself. And now, with the wealth of information out there on the internet and digital distribution, musicians and young artists are much more self-empowered. But there still are a lot of questions and things that I think working with people who have experience can help them navigate. Like, a lot of people can figure out how to make recordings now. You can make a really good recording on your laptop in your bedroom. But how do you promote that, and how do you market that, and what's the smartest way to do that? So there's still a lot of questions that young bands have and can use help with. And for some acts, I think they're going to want to remain very independent and probably just self-release it or do it on their own terms. But a lot of other artists, I think, still need and want help from established management, from established labels and promotion, traditional promotion. So I think there's no direct single path anyone can follow, and I think that's one of the things that's exciting about the state of the world that we live in now, the music industry that we live in now, is that there are all these opportunities, and I think it's just trying to figure out how to use them to your advantage. People want good music, but with the advent of the digital technology and the internet, there's probably 5 million bands out there now, or 10 million bands, I don't know how many. 30 years ago, because it was a lot harder, you sort of had to really fight your way and be good to a certain extent to get heard. And now anybody can be heard. So what it's done is it's kind of given us a gigantic sea awash in mediocrity. There's so much music you have to wade through sometimes to find something that you love. That being said, a great song or a great artist is going to find an audience. They are going to rise above that gigantic sea of music. And so if you're good, you're going to find an audience, and it's much easier now for an artist to do than it was 30 years ago.
Well, okay, you're good and you can find the audience. Can you make a living at it?
That's the million-dollar question. I mean, I think that's one of the things we're going to talk about at the Yellow Foam Conference is how do you make a living these days? Obviously, CD sales are way down, and even with services like Spotify, I mean, it's great to get airplay on there, but their percentage that they pay for a million streams is just, you know, unbelievably low. So you're not going to really be able to afford a career doing that. But if you can get your music out there and heard, maybe you can get it licensed in a TV show or a film or a commercial. As I said, because it's being consumed in so many different ways now, all these ad agencies want music and licensing agencies. And that's, I know a lot of bands that's where they're making their living now. There are avenues that artists are realizing they have to pursue rather than just try to rely on traditional record sales.
How does that change how you put an album together? And you've done this both from a musician side and a producer side. Do you have to think about making your music in a different way?
Well, what I've seen as a producer is a lot of new bands have to be very, very efficient with how they record. There's just not the sales from expected CD sales to justify spending $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 on a album, and you know maybe that was a long time coming because obviously through probably in the 70s and the 80s there was a lot of excess on definitely in the music business on promotion and you know catering to every whim of a superstar artist, but everyone's had to get really kind of lean and tight and focused, and I think in some ways that's good. There are so many ways to record now and make a great recording. But one of the things that I think is a bit sad is a lot of the studios have been forced to close because of lack of business. My studio, Smart Studios, being one of them. You know, we just couldn't keep our doors open because we weren't getting enough business, even though we were offering rates that were dirt cheap for bands to come in there. Even if we were saying, come on in for a couple $100 a day to record, which is nothing really, they could still do it for free at home on their laptops. So one of the sad things is the great spaces, a lot of the great studios are slowly closing the doors, and what's going to happen is a lot of artists are never going to get that chance to record in a really great recording studio. You know, they're going to be recording on their laptop in their basement.
Yeah, and that's something that we lose because there is a sound and there's an energy and there's it's almost ineffable. I don't know that you could necessarily put your finger on it. There might be some acoustical things you could point to and say, yes, it's like designed this way. But, you know, I think we as listeners lose something we might not be able to put our finger on.
I agree. And I think part of that is the sound of people playing in a room,
mm-hmm.
which is how the earliest recordings were ever made. A group of musicians stand around a microphone and they record a performance into it. And that's a tangible feel of the energy of the way they're interacting and the way that their fingers are expressing the instruments and the way their voices are uniting. And obviously a studio these days, digital, not only can you create anything, but there's all these presets that have manufactured, you know, already pre-made drum sounds and bass sounds and keyboards and guitar sounds. And so I think what I've heard, a lot of that starts to sound generic, and it doesn't have as much character as, you know, sometimes I would prefer. You lose some of that magical quality of getting people into a room and capturing a vibe.
Yeah, where everybody's excited to do it and you just have that energy that it's why people go to live shows, because there's nothing else like it.
Yeah, and that's an experience you share, you
right.
know, and it becomes a communal thing, and that's why great live bands are always probably going to have a career, because you can't necessarily duplicate that on a record, and you can't share that experience in an MP3 file.
How does the fact that you are an accomplished musician and, you know, been in any number of bands and done that, how does that feed your producing?
Well, I think because I started out as a drummer and then slowly became a songwriter and got interested in engineering and then producing, I've always had sort of a view of being a musician first, and I think I'm very cognizant of the fact of what it's like to be in a band, what that dynamic means, you know, interacting with people on a personal level, on a psychological level. And to me, a big part of producing is that, it's the psychological aspect. It's not just how do you get a snare drum sound. Any good engineer can get a good snare drum sound. And at the end of the day, an audience doesn't really respond to the snare drum sound. They want to hear a performance. They want to grab onto something emotional. And so much of that, I think, at least for me when I'm in the studio, is trying to tap into the sort of the psyche of the band or the artist I'm working with and figure out what it is that makes them unique and powerful. And when am I feeling this performance? And that's something you can't really teach. You just have to sort of figure it out and understand it in a way. And I would say, you know, when I first started out, for me, recording was probably 80% technical and 20% more psychological. And I, to some extent, I'd say it's almost flipped completely the opposite. It really is so much of it for me is getting into an artist's head and understanding what their vibe is, you know, and then trying to really pull out great performances.
Well, speaking of your musical side of things, I have to say I loved the most recent Garbage album.
Right on.
And was it fun to get back in the studio with a band?
Well, when we got back together for Not Your Kind of People, we'd been on a 7-year break, and I think we were all kind of nervous just to see what would happen. And the good thing is having that long break, any sort of tension or band trauma that sometimes happens, even with Garbage, that it all dissipated. And we kind of felt like we had a fresh start. And because we were no longer on a label and we had changed management, no one even knew what we were doing, so we didn't really feel any pressure. And there was no timeline or agenda at the time either. And I think because of that, not feeling any pressure, the songs just came really quickly. And we sort of embraced who we are as a band. We didn't want to try and reinvent how we sound, you know. How should Garbage sound 7 years after our last record? We just defaulted to what we like to do best, the sensibility of how we play and write together. And for better or for worse, we do have a sound, and that's part of it is just what we like sonically and just in terms of how we play as musicians and how Shirley sings. And we kind of look at that now as a badge of honor that Garbage has a sound, you know, because there are so many bands out there, like we talked about earlier, and millions of bands, and to have a sonic fingerprint, you know, sort of an identity of how you sound is an important thing these days. So we embraced that, and I think in a way that freed us up. And then we went out and did almost 150 shows on tour, and that was eye-opening, but also really, really fun. And we're gearing up for a 20th anniversary next year, and we're probably going to be doing some shows in the summer and the fall. And we just started a new record. We hope to have a new Garbage record finished by the end of this year. It'll be out sometime later next year.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great news. Are you planning to do the tour here? Because would love to have you in the studio.
Well, I'm sure we will. I mean, we always usually come back and play in Milwaukee and play Madison, Chicago, Minneapolis. You know, it's but being from the Midwest, we have a lot of fans back there and just friends and family. So it's always a real treat for us to come back there and spend some time. So I'm sure we will. We don't really have any. It's too early to have any, anything set in concrete yet in terms of when that will be. But I'd love to come on the show, Bonnie, when we're back there. That would be fun.
Oh, let's plan it. That would be fantastic. And I also have to ask another Wisconsin question. Of course.
Sure.
I know the schedule isn't in your favor when you're here, but you're going to go up to Lambeau.
Well, I get in Thursday night, and then I'm giving the keynote speech with Jeff on Friday morning. And I tried to see if I could go to Seattle to see the game and then catch a red eye.
You are hardcore. Oh, my God.
It got too hectic. So but when we get in Thursday night, we're going to have some sort of Packer party. We're going to be watching somewhere. I think Jeff and I land like at 5 o'clock, and the game's on at 7. So we'll definitely be hold up somewhere. I'm a hardcore Packer fan. It's the only sort of sport that I'm really kind of crazy about. But it's really, for me, it's all about the Packers. So I'm excited. I think they're going to have a pretty good team again this year.
It looks like it. Yeah, I think people are pretty excited. You know, kind of the buzz, of course. It never goes down, but it's kind of come back up.
You know, years ago, our guitar tech in Garbage Chad Zamish and I wrote a song, Go Pat Go. We sort of wrote it on the tour bus when we were in Europe somewhere. And then we made a copy and sent it up to Lambo, and they play it from time. We went to a game, and they play it from time to time in the game, and it's just such a thrill to be in Lambo and hear a song you recorded being blasted over the PA. It's a real trip, man.
I was going to say, here you are, you know, you produce Nirvana, you know, you're in Garbage, and what really gets you is the fact that Lambo Field plays your song.
I can die a happy man.
Your life is complete. That is fantastic. Well, you know, Butch, I cannot thank you enough for taking time out. I know you've got a busy schedule, but I really appreciate you talking with us. And I'm going to hold you to that. Please come on the show.
I will. That'll be great, Bonnie.
All right. And we'll see you at the conference.
We'll see you at the conference.
Viroqua native Butch Vig is one of the founders of the band Garbage, founded in Madison in 1993, and also an award-winning music producer. He'll give the keynote talk at the Yellowphone Music Conference later this week in Milwaukee. He spoke with Bonnie North. We'll hear from one of the bands hoping for big things from this week's conference when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.